here, and welcome to another episode of the Richard Lewis Show. Today, we have a guest who's going to clear up his side of a big story that's been breaking in the YouTube community. Some of you will probably already have heard the name Eric Feinberg. He's been linked to this, story about YouTube and advertisers pulling out. People are attributing this to being part of his patent, part of his software. We were able to get in touch with Eric. Eric's on the line with us right now, and he's going to put his side of things out there and clear up some misinformation for us. So first of all, Eric, thanks very much for joining us. How are things at the moment?
Things are good, and I want to thank you for setting this up on such short notice so I can clear the air on my part. And kind of move the ball down the field so we can really get this problem solved with Google, with YouTube, and get the YouTubers back to earning some revenue from paid advertising.
Yeah, well, look, so let's start with the big part here. The reason that your name has been propelled into the kind of common vernacular of people who follow YouTube, YouTubers, and that kind of thing, is based on big companies pulling out their support for YouTube, withdrawing their advertisements, which is having a adverse effect on the revenues of multiple high-profile YouTubers, and in fact, YouTubers of all levels across the board. Now, the key publication that has been pushing this is the Wall Street Journal, and they published some screenshots of a Coca-Cola advertisement being used on a video that had the N-word in the title. This was being pushed out there by a journalist called Jack Nikas, who was saying this was proof that brands were being linked to hate speech. Now, around about the same time, you had contacted other publications and you were showing how the same advertisements were being used on terrorist and extremist material. And as a result of those two things happening in such a close proximity, people have assumed that you contacted the Wall Street Journal. Now, we've obviously talked before this show that we're taping, and you've said that isn't true, that is an incorrect assumption. So tell me about that. And again, just for the record, you've had no contact with the Wall Street Journal in terms of passing on those screenshots.
Yes, I had nothing to do with that story. I think what they did is kind of low-lying fruit. Hate speech is bad. The use of those terms, the N-word and basically death to Jews as a Jew, it's bad. But it's not terrorist speech. Actually, it's somewhat covered by free speech. Now, if advertisers feel vis-a-vis, they don't want to have their ads running with offensive content such as the N-word or death to Jews, that's up to them. But that's not terrorism. That's not funding ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, and Hamas. And that's a different scenario to what we've uncovered.
Mm. Well, let's talk about that then. Let's talk about the work you've done at GuyPeck, which is what kind of got this ball started. And there's multiple instances of you raising this with social media companies. We'll keep it to YouTube for now. So you have some software which has detected links between... You're able to detect extremist videos, and in particular the ones that have premium adverts on them. Is that correct?
Well, somewhat. What we do is we detect the videos that are terrorist, Islamic, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, Hamas. Then we have to go through the individual links that we bring in, because our mission is, it's the advertising or the brand safety issues, the byproduct of ridding ISIS, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah videos off of social media, including YouTube. The brand safety issue is a byproduct, because when the system brings in the links based on key terminologies or key data points of how we find these videos, you will see ads showing up on some of these terrorist videos.
Mm. So how does it work? How, because I might be an idiot here, Eric, but how does a terrorist organization claim YouTube revenue? How does that occur?
They sign up for, and it's common knowledge, you know, to YouTube's shared advertising program. You go in and YouTube says that, and this is what's interesting is YouTube has it. They're shared. It's you know, public record. If you want to make money off your channel, you sign up, you send mm-hmm. YouTube your information, you give them your Gmail account, and, you know, based on, you know, the amount of impressions you get, eventually you'll start making money off your video and channel, and that's how it works.
But the specific question, though, Eric, is, you know, if I was a terrorist, if I was an extremist, if I was putting videos up on YouTube saying death to America or telling people how to make bombs, why would I risk there being a tie that could be found by the FBI, the CIA, any intelligence agency, and detect me for what would probably be a very small amount of money in real terms?
Well, some of these are not. Some of them are not necessarily the organizations themselves, although they are. And again, their messaging is very subliminal. The ones I've noticed that have the ads on them aren't necessarily the ones that are directional. I think I sent you one last night for G3 Media, which is, you know, how to make bombs and tactical. That's Al Qaeda. That one doesn't have ads on it. But the ones you see, which are more like inspirational, spiritual, of kind of like, you know, what I call like radicalized, those are the ones that have the ads on. And what they do is they kind of cover themselves with either themselves or a degree of separation of a supporter who puts these ads up.
So when you kind of realized this was happening, you did contact a number of press outlets to get your story out there, to kind of raise awareness that this was happening. And I tweeted one out as an example, which was Trump campaign adverts that were somehow placed on extremist videos. I have no idea how that could happen. That seems like a slight flaw in the algorithm there. But also as well, you know, I've got numerous examples of times you've talked to, you know, Fox News to talk about this and to talk about, you know, instances of terror and how that's linked to YouTube allowing, you know, extremists to monetize through their platform. So do you admit that you've kind of, I guess, for want of a better word, planted these seeds with these media outlets and had this media coverage about this particular issue?
The media, as the word media says, was the medium between me and Google. It's impossible to get to Google. There's nobody at Google you can get to. So the reason why using the media and allowing the media to vet or look what I had, because they have the ability to go to Google and show what we have for them to see it. And that's the reason why and how I've used the media is to allow the media then to look at it, vet it, and then go them be able, because Google, YouTube will return a call to Fox, the Daily Caller, CNN, NBC, where they won't take Eric Feinberg, the guy, picked seriously. So that's why we sent it to the media, as to show them to vet it, and then them go and say, okay, what do you think of this? And it's been 2 years now that we basically worked with, you know, a group out of D.C. The first story broke by CNN 2 years ago, and CNN, you know, money had it. And it's been 2 years now that this issue, as far as our side identifying it, has been out there, and nothing's been done about it. And actually, it's been escalated, not only on the ads showing up on the ISIS and terrorist videos, but how many ISIS and other terrorist groups videos are now on the YouTube platform.
So let's kind of get into more abstract questions, and you may be able to answer these. You may not. So the first question, I think, is, were you concerned about perhaps creating what some people might refer to as a moral panic, some people might refer to as just, you know, just a panic in general, you know, that people are going to believe that YouTube is a platform that is infested with extremists and terrorists? I mean, was that a concern that if people followed the coverage that you put out there in the media, that this is a conclusion that people could arrive at?
Yeah, and my concerns are, if you look at it, 2 years ago, when we first identified it, it was basically Charlie Hebdo. Since then, what do we had? Paris, Brussels, Istanbul Airport, Nice, San Bernardino, Orlando, Berlin, just now Moscow. So I think what it is, the paradigm has shifted for where the world was in March of 2015, where we are in April of 2017. Mm-hmm. And that when you look at it and what the content of these videos are, I think my mission, or from a moral standpoint, was just look at the uptick in terrorists and terrorist attacks in this 2 year time frame. And I think I'm justified morally for what I'm doing here.
So do you apportion some of the blame for these terrorist attacks to YouTube and by extension Google?
Yeah, and all social media, because I see it, and it's across the platform, and we see it how they recruit and radicalize, and information we picked up. Again, ours, the system kind of follows the behavioral patterns of the terrorists and the terrorist organizations. Our system actually identified or anticipated the Bangladesh and the Nice attacks last year, and we proved it within a realm of a few points off, but we kind of anticipated, based on the data we were picking up across all social media platforms, that there was going to be an attack in Bangladesh and an attack in France within the time periods that we anticipated those attacks to be. So it's across the social media paradigm.
So, I mean, there'll be people listening to this that think this sounds quite fantastical, you know, that there's a way to almost kind of foresee, extremist events based on social media patterns. But is that a fair summary?
That's a fair summary. Yes, because okay. They give you keywords and indicate if we have data that can predict or sell you products based on your searches, then, mm-hmm. then why can't you look at data correlated and then figure out that the data could be consequential in a possible terrorist attack?
So the next question, again, keeping it abstract, is based on that, people might arrive at the conclusion that YouTube is infested, with extremist content. Is that your position? I mean, do you think, because to me, I've never come across it until you showed it to me. I mean, obviously I'm not looking for it. But I would imagine it's quite a small problem. I mean, I would imagine that this is very niche and isn't easy to access, and would perhaps only be accessible to people that were already in some way, shape, or form kind of on that path to radicalization anyway. Are you saying that this is a much bigger problem than what I believe it to be?
Yes, it is much bigger. And I think because YouTube, Google's not paying attention to it, it's almost like playing a sport where you have an offensive team and there's no defense. Mm.
So the next point then is, if that is the case, and if that is true, did you foresee how the kind of resulting panic, the software itself, if you like, could be used, could be repurposed to go after things that you're not particularly interested in? You know, we've talked about this now.
Because the words being used, my software is not focused on words like the N-word or death to Jews, because that's not the communication strands used by terrorist groups. How's that? So we don't Kufa, Infidel, Fatwa, Al-Qaeda, Alpha Khan, Anja, Al-Bayan, okay? Clerics such as Anwar al-Awlaki, Adan. That's the difference, because we keep it very much within a vertical that is very specific to the communication strands, including we're getting a little bit into the Arabic and Farsi translations that would not put the N-word or, you know, yeah, we do pick up certain things we choose, but it comes with other correlated data. We're just not focused on one bit of correlated data. So our software would not pick up anything having to do with that because we're not focused per se on hate speech. We're focused on communication strands and speaks used by known terrorist groups.
So how do you explain, in such a close proximity to the Ad Age article coming out and on this other coverage about terrorist material having advertisements on it, that the Wall Street Journal also come up with a very similar story, the only difference being its advertisements on content they don't like, or as you put it, content containing the N-word in the title. And they use that as an indictment for the whole platform and effectively impact on the livelihoods of just regular YouTubers trying to create, maybe slightly controversial content, but nothing you could dub extremists. Why did the Wall Street Journal publish a story in such close proximity to the London Times article, to the Ad Age article? Why do you think that happened?
I don't understand myself. And it actually, I think it kind of, minimizes then the message. We, the London Times, some of the Fox stuff, it minimizes it. That it's not, yes, hate speech against Jews, against African Americans in that way is wrong. Advertisers have a right to not have their names associated with that. That's a call. But, to say the N-word or derogatory statements against Jews and any religion, that's not terrorism. That's hate speech. And it's actually covered under free speech.
Mm. So what do we make of the Wall Street Journal's campaign? Because, the way I look at it is you've kind of been wrongly associated now. And again, I take you at your word. I believe what you're saying, Eric. So you've been wrongly associated at something that is, hugely important to a very large number of people. And that is that their favorite YouTubers, some are talking about having to quit making videos. Some are talking about leaving the platform. Some are saying they're no longer going to be able to afford to do this full time. Some are saying, some YouTubers that have like ongoing health problems are saying they might not be able to afford the healthcare because of this huge drop in advertising revenue. So what are your thoughts about this Wall Street Journal campaign? Because I'm guessing it doesn't align with your values at all.
No, it doesn't. And I think it's some of the claims they're making, I'm not going to, I want to stay out of it, but I think the YouTuber's claims might have some that validity to it. And I think that's why I'm doing this call with you, to set the record straight and show the difference of what's been our research that we've shared with the media and the research done in the London Times, that it's not the same as what the Wall Street Journal put out. Ours is about terrorism and known terrorist organizations that are calling for killing people and destruction of the West. That is not the same. The N-word, again, it's hate speech against terrorism, known terrorist organizations.
So have you talked to the Wall Street Journal at all?
I tried to get a hold of them. I put two calls into them. I've yet to get a call back. I would like to talk to them because they've actually put me and my family a little bit in harm's way with this by, again, the perception of the audience thinking that we had something to do with that story and we had nothing to do with that story. It's not the same. I would not put information like out there and say, oh, this is, it's hate speech. It's not known terrorist organizations.
So, here's the other thing that's been said, and while this may sound uncharitable, Eric, I can see why people might say this. So I'll refer you back to the Ad Age, I think it was, article, which was kind of talking about how you have this technology that's able to identify extremist material on YouTube that has advertising placed upon it, that you have this database of incredibly vast keywords and search strands and social media trends that help identify this. And it quite expressly said in that article that you were looking to sell this technology to Google in order to combat this problem. Now, a lot of people have taken this to mean that you have driven and created this moral panic simply to profit.
That was a little bit of kind of a misquote in the story. That's not what I meant. What I meant was, and what I was trying to do, is to kind of have Google, I would like Google to contact me and work with me, especially on the issue of these terrorist videos. That this is where the seriousness comes, is that YouTube, all of them, the social media platforms, Twitter, are being used to recruit and radicalize. So what I'm trying to do, and how much time, you know, tell me how much time we have. Every day that goes by that we don't have a terrorist attack, especially in this country, is a good day, right? We don't know when the terrorists are going to attack. So how much time do you want to say, well, give it time? So by doing this, and whether I did it, and I was a little bit misquoted in some of the things, I'm not a patent troll. I'm not looking, I'm not, Google hasn't, you know, I'm not trying to sue them over any kind of thing. All I said was that I had a 2-year head start on this, which I did, maybe more. So why wouldn't YouTube want to take advantage of my 2-year head start? Oh, and by the way, that 2-year head start is now covered under a patent.
But this isn't the first time you've kind of tried to take on a big social media platform, a big media platform, for things that you believe encourage, or rather harbor, you know, extremist material. You've had a previous kind of, for want of a better phrase, running battle with Facebook, correct?
Yeah, because again, you know, some of the things, all of it, I think where I'm at and what needs to be done and what we're seeing here is that we have, it's media. Media needs, just like, you know, you work for, you know, whatever, CNN, Turner, Fox, NBC, they're regulated by the FCC and the FTC. I think this needs to be brought under the auspices of some kind of oversight like the FCC and the FTC. All right. Some of the issues I've had has to do with my original stuff was on the counterfeiting, the piracy, the use of these counterfeit sites that look real and then load malware, okay, onto your, you know, computer. I mean, what my, you know, you're right. My first go around with Facebook was that they not only were selling $12 Ray-Ban sunglasses, but the sites associated that people were clicking on, social engineering, were loading malware to your system, a Zeus malware to drain your bank account. So when these are all like criminal enterprises who use the ruse, social engineering, to dupe people into saying, oh, look, I can get a $12 pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses, I can get a Louis Vuitton bag for $99, I can get an NFL jersey, it's fine. But those websites, when you go on them, possibly have malware on them that can, you know, cause harm to your system and spyware on them. So those were my issues going back then. And then, of course, the same protocols and procedures. I'm still, of course, very vocal on counterfeiting and privacy on the web, what it does. But I was able to take the same protocols, procedures, coding, and then reposition the system to not only go after that, but look at, you know, how terrorists use the platforms too.
Yeah, but let's just talk about a specific case here. Now, just for clarity, and this is for my own understanding as well, Eric, you seem to have a relationship, whether it's just as a consultant or whatever, I'm sure you'll be able to clarify it for me, with a law firm called 1-800 Law Firm that seems to cover quite a broad spectrum of legal things, but in particular, it does cover terrorism and, you know, kind of social media. What's your relationship with that law firm?
We share intelligence with them. We work together. They have a similar interest to us. And again, they thought, you know, based on what it was, that there was a need, you know, to bring attention to these issues. They take on, you know, these kind of things. And because we had the intelligence and the ability to do this, they've seen it. So that's the relationship, is we're sharing with them. And really the whole thing is, if you talk to people, there's a word one of the attorneys used over there. It's called behavior modification. What we're trying to do here is, And again, let's come back to what this is. It's the terrorists, the use of terrorism on these social media platforms to call for killing and destruction of Western society.
So, but again, you know, could you understand how it might look? Say, for example, in the case of, I believe it's Keith Altman, who right. works for that law firm. He's taking on a lawsuit on behalf of the family of Naomi Gonzalez, who was killed, tragically killed, obviously, in the Paris terror attacks. And that lawsuit is aiming to sue Google, Facebook, and Twitter on the grounds that they provided material that supports the Islamic State in one form or another. Now, if people were to look at this, I imagine there's many people who might think, well, you know, yes, these companies do have a responsibility to suppress extremist material. I think I'd be inclined to agree with that, frankly. But there also might be people who say, but to sue these companies, to try and insinuate that they're responsible for this tragedy is, you know, quite irresponsible and quite a slippery slope and not something that they'd like to support. And this is the key thing. There'll be people out there who will look at this relationship that you have to this law firm, that will see your name continually next to this law firm on these lawsuits that target Google, Facebook, and Twitter. And people might assume that you're hijacking these causes to kind of further your own
goals. I'm furthering an agenda to protect us, all right? The goal of my goal is, and it's always been, is protection in the real world for information that's being disseminated in the online world, okay? I want to know that when I go out that and what's happening, that people aren't being radicalized today, okay, online, to go cause, you know, damage and havoc in the world. That's, if you ask me what the mission is that not giving, like I said, a pure offensive position to terrorist groups and no defense on these social media platforms. That's it.
So let's talk about previous outcomes, because as I said, initially you started and it wasn't about terrorism, it was about criminal enterprise. So you did address Facebook, and as you said, how there would be websites that would say, for example, on the NFL page, on Facebook or any NFL page, the advertisements that would be served on those pages by Facebook would be for counterfeit NFL merchandise. And as you rightly said, and you know, I don't need to be an expert in the field to know this much, those websites that create that, you know, faked merchandise, they are criminal enterprises. They do operate in a nefarious way, very often out of Russia and in particular China. And or sometimes as well, those companies, the people that do that, can have links to extremist groups as well. How did that pan out? Because I read a lot about it prior to talking to you. Were you able to force Facebook into any meaningful changes?
It appears, okay, that this issue is not, it seems to be that we don't see as much. It's still there, it happens, but we don't see as much counterfeit and pirated sponsored ads leading to websites. Okay. So that has, in some regards, I'm not seeing it as, you know, we're not finding it as much as we can. So yes, it has helped. But what's going on now, and I can show you this, the use of, you know, these terrorist organizations to use these platforms in a way to recruit and radicalize and give information that would not be readily available to the, you know, John Q. public unless you knew where to look for this stuff. And it's there.
I want to ask you a question about, because, you know, you seem to be like myself, you seem to be a free speech advocate, you know, in the sense that you're even saying, look, hate speech, you know, is unfortunately, I suppose, protected, you know, by the Constitution of America. It's a free speech right. And unless it's inciting violence, you know, you don't have any issue with it. But I did see there was a report on Fox News in November 2016, and here it was talking about fake news. And, you know, this is a buzzword that's out there right now. You know, fake news this, fake news that, you know, falsified reporting ultimately to try and sway people one way or the other to a political end. And you were quoted in this report. So how do you feel about that? Do you think social media companies should be algorithmically determining what's real and what isn't and what I can and can't read?
Yeah, I'm a fake news story right now. How's that? I've basically been tied in to the Wall Street Journal, and an alternative narrative is going out there that I was, you know, in cahoots with the Wall Street Journal. And because of that, my and my family is at, you know, public risk. How's that? I'm a fake news story. So, yes, but I'm the best example of it.
Okay, but being, with that said, you know, and it is very unfortunate what's happened to you. And, you know, I apologize as well for incorrectly making that assumption. You know, I care very much about the truth and factual reporting. You know, and that's why we're talking now to set the record straight. But aren't you worried in the same way that your kind of technology or your cause has been leveraged to effectively create an issue that you're not passionate about? Do you feel when you talk about things like fake news, you know, do you see the dangers of corporation determining what's fake and what isn't rather than?
Well, that was a side ancillary of use. The real mission and focus we have here and fake news, and that's is really the terrorist stuff. That's really, when you look at it and what we're about here and who we are and corporate culture, it's that terrorist communication content has no place in social media. And it's and again, we see it, we see how it's being used. That's really our mission focus. And that's really what we're about. It's not, okay, tomorrow, and I'm seeing this, and it is, the ads are not showing up on some of the videos, the ISIS videos, Hamas videos that have been reported in the press, but the videos are still up there. Mm-hmm. What are they doing up there?
Yeah. So how would... No, go on, sorry.
There's a preacher, you can look it up, named Anwar al-Awlaki. He was thrown to death by Obama back in 2011, I think 2012. Today, on YouTube, there's a video that basically says, Al-Awlaki, death to Kufis. Go ahead and kill Kufis. We're Kufis, non-believers. What is it doing there? How do you feel about that?
It's a good question. And again, just for the people watching this at home, you know, I can certainly verify Eric has sent me a number of links to videos, which are certainly, they appear to be extremist in nature. Some of them make direct reference to ISIS, and these have advertisements on them. That, you know, this is definitely something that is happening, and there's certainly evidence of that right in front of me now as I'm talking with Eric. Now, again, the issue I have here is, you know, I don't think anybody would be against what you're talking about. I think everybody wants extremist content off the YouTube platform. I don't think anybody wants our social media experience to have these people on it, to enable young people to be radicalized, to spread information that's potentially dangerous and harmful to millions of people worldwide. I think we can all agree with that. But here's the issue. It's kind of like the genie's out the bottle now, Eric, and it's the labeling. You know, the Wall Street Journal are trying to intimate that certain videos that me and you wouldn't even care about are extreme. And we've seen this before. We saw it with the fake news narrative. You know, we've seen it with what's suddenly racist and what isn't. Who's a white supremacist and who isn't. And I'm very worried about the slippery slope because I see it being enacted time and time again. And I'm worried about this potentially leading to, a golden age of censorship on YouTube, which might fix the problem you care about, but might create a dozen others for people that share your cause.
Well, that's why I'm having this call with you, because again, Kufa is not the same as the N-word, infidel, okay? Terms used. Die, a simple thing like die in your rage. Who uses that? Not us. That's ISIS. These are the terms used by ISIS and ISIS sympathizers, caliphate. So the thing is, and this is what we could do for Google and YouTube, we sandbox. We're not looking at things like the N-word or like, kill Jews. And, unless, again, we correlate some of this data. So if kill Jews shows up with Kufa, infidel, Bakwa, Bismillah, the terms used by ISIS, yes, that would be quarantined and sandboxed. And again, our thing is not for immediate takedown. It's basically to quarantine, sandbox, put in a queue line for review. Mm-hmm. It's not for immediate takedown. We're here as a force multiplier.
So, moving forward, is there anything we can do to kind of steer the conversation more towards what you want to talk about, which is how we get terrorists, terrorist groups, extremist groups to not be funded, to not be monetized on YouTube, and away from what the Wall Street Journal and now all these other leftist publications want to talk about, which is censoring, people like Sargon of Akkad and people like this who are going to get caught in this monetization crossfire, even though they've got nothing to do with the bigger issue. Is there anything we can do, Eric?
Yes, I think again, I'm offering, again, it was misquoted. I'm offering to sit down with Google, YouTube, to sit down with me and my team and go through and for them to understand and everybody understand the difference about what hate speech is and the difference of known terrorist organizations using communication strands to recruit and radicalize that are also being funded by these ads. That's the difference. It's two different, kind of agendas.
But what about in terms of the YouTubers that are going to be affected in the meantime? I mean, do you envision...
As fast as YouTube shows the advertising community, and there's still skepticism, I see it within the advertising community, and that it's going to be safe for advertisers, agencies to come back. Well, that's on YouTube. How fast do they want to move? And I can tell you right now what we're seeing, again, that ads, and I've sent you examples, I sent you actually the videos, you'll see, right? I showed you video last night, right?
Well, yes.
So I'm not photoshopping it. You could actually see that outbrain. I sent you this. So until advertisers feel confident that ads are not going to show up next to ISIS, Hezbollah, Hamas, Al-Qaeda videos being radicalized, that's what YouTube's going to and Google's going to have to do. They're going to have to show it one time. That whether it's me, the London Times, any other media company, and I'm sure that, I'll probably be asked on what we're doing, and it shows the same thing's going to happen again.
I kind of wish, in a way, I don't know, I feel if this has been taken a bit more seriously or had generated a different kind of attention, perhaps during the election cycle, which is when this really started kind of entering into the common discussion in media outlets, I feel if it had been noticed then, we wouldn't be in the position we're in now.
How about going back 2 years ago, and we shared this with Google? There have been things I've worked on with other groups. Google has seen our research and groups we worked with, this research, and they chose to do nothing. And again, through the press, we utilize the media as the medium to Google to show what we've come up with. And again, before Fox, ABC, NBC, Daily Caller, CNN, anybody who reported this, they've shown this research to Google. And Google's answer was, terrorism is no place on our platform. If you tell us, we'll take it down. Really? Their own answer is, if 500 hours of YouTube videos are uploaded any minute, how can any human being, especially human beings who don't know what to look for, have the ability to go out and be able to do this? So that's I mean, as again, you saw it, the CNN article 2 years ago, groups we work with, you know, lobbying groups, it's been reported, you know, in four cycles, March, April 2015, then it was March, April 2016, September 2016, and now this February to April cycle, and Google has chosen to do nothing, and their excuse is, tell us, we'll take it down. With 500 hours of video uploaded any minute, how can they expect us to do their work when they have access to their own API?
How do you respond to, there was a report that was put out there where it was a chap, I think Matt Britton is the name. He's like the head of YouTube for Europe, Africa, and Asia, I believe. And what he said in the report was that the advertisers have always had the ability to control where their adverts are placed, and he doesn't feel that, you know, they understood that maybe they weren't using these controls correctly, and that they now want to repurpose these controls to make them easier to use and give advertisers a greater degree of flexibility. Do you buy that? I mean, do you think that's accurate?
No, because the question comes back to, what's the content doing there in the first place? Our argument is, the ads are the same. Why is ISIS, why are these terrorist groups allowed to post within these 400 to 500 hours of videos uploaded every minute to YouTube? That's my argument.
Realistically, even if they were to adopt your technology, take on board your patent, do you ever believe that any social media platform can remain free of that kind of element?
No, but better than what we're doing now, and doing something, at least having some defense out there, is better than no defense, okay?
So we're getting close to time, and look, I'm going to ask you a question, and again, this will probably seem harsh, but I hope you understand why I'm asking it. You strike me as very passionate about the issue of shutting down terrorism and not allowing terrorists to use social media platforms to recruit or to share information or to radicalize people. So it would beg the question, given that you feel so passionately about it and you want to stop it, why haven't you proffered this technology for free?
Because it's tremendous. It's a tremendous undertaking. You have to go into four. You know how much the cost got to be to go into 400 hours and what you've got to do. How can I do it for free? You've got to get inside the infrastructures of the servers of these social media. How can I do it for free?
But you said it's already done, right? I mean, you've got the patent in place.
It's in an incubator. It's done. Where I'm doing it kind of low scale. I'm not looking at 400 hours. You're talking about, you know, I've proven it. You've got to build a tremendous infrastructure. What I've done here is developed a light bulb for the vaccine. Now I need somebody, and it's a cost structure to take it to market. All right. That's what I've done here. You got to get into their infrastructures.
People will say, you know, that this is the kind of thing that, you know,
I am doing it for free. Technically, I am doing it for free because I'm alerting them what's going on, and I'm giving them a chance to fix it themselves. How's that? So I am doing it for free. I'm giving that nobody. I didn't have to disclose anything I'm doing. I could have kept it to myself. I did this and offering them it to free to see if they could fix the problem themselves. I'm kind of like, in a sense, saying, okay, guys, let's see if you can do it.
So is there any truth? There was some people in the media speculating that the nature of the patent that you put would potentially allow you to litigate against Google.
No, I'm not into litigating the patent. The patent was my protection, that when I did show them the techniques and the process, I was protected by a patent. I'm not here to sue them. That was misquoted. The reason why you get a patent, and especially when you're dealing with technology, you want to make sure that what your process is and what you're doing is protected, especially when you're making presentations to fit to the Silicon Valley in this group. That was it. It was never, I'm not here to sue them, okay? They can, and if, hey, God bless them, they can figure it out, and maybe they can fast track it. Maybe they can figure out how to get around my patent. I got around some patents.
So here's another question just on that train of thought. What if Google called you up? You know, this, let's say this goes viral. You know, people understand your goals now, understand that you're not linked to what the Wall Street Journal is trying to push. And Google are like, you know what? What's the harm? And they pick up the phone and they decide that they would like to get you into the offices and just talk to you on the proviso that, you know, there might not be a sale. But they definitely like to pick your brains and get some information from you. No money will change hands. You know, would that be something you were willing to do?
Yeah, but under a professional NDA, non-disclosure agreement, which anybody in my situation would do.
So, agreed.
So I'd have to do it as business under a confidentiality agreement, and that's just good business under an NDA. Yes, I'm more than happy. And I've wanted them to call me. I want to work with these social media companies. I'm not, but again, you can't have, I hear all this thing about old media and new media. Okay. Old media, but you know, let's go back to the Wall Street Journal and whatever it is. The Wall Street Journal does not allow a content from terrorists and then running ads on them. Okay. The Wall Street Journal would not allow sale of counterfeit Louis Vuitton, Ray-Ban, and NFL jerseys. You know, everybody wants to talk. There's got to be oversight on this. It's got to be, and this is what's happened, that, you know, can I curse on this? Can I say
something? Yeah, absolutely. I do it all the time. Feel free.
Okay, let me give you one, and you tell me this. And this is where, actually, Sergeant Penny got brought in. We discovered it. You remember Dallas last year, right? The five Dallas officers, right? And that's how, you know, right? The killing of the five Dallas officers. You can search this story. There's a hashtag floating around social media, including YouTube videos, which up to a few weeks ago had ads on them that said "fuck 12." Hashtag "fuck 12." Mm-hmm. Now, to me, and this is where the question becomes old media, new media. And I asked you right now, can I curse? When I've done interviews on traditional or old media, I'm not allowed to say "fuck." Now, tell me why on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, "fuck 12." Trends. And you know what fuck 12 stands for? It basically is calling out for killing of police officers. That hashtag was associated as a signal with an horrific beheading video, you know, of James Foley, basically with a police officer in ISIS that could be, you know, construed to recruit and radicalize, possibly had something to do with the recruitment and radicalizing of Mika Johnson to killing of five Dallas officers. Why is fuck 12 there? That's not to me. That's where you cross the line of free speech, because that's an insightful hashtag calling for the killing of law enforcement officers. And
yeah,
that's
no,
on social media.
I understand it has its origins from Code
Atlanta.
12. Yeah, in Atlanta, where I'm based right now, which is narcotic officers are about to raid somebody, a Code 12, right?
Right. So what's that doing? And what happens is there's repurposing of content. There was a movie from 2005, I'm trying to think, Get Rich or Die Trying, a Paramount picture, and there's a picture out there of a police officer, an NYPD police officer. Now, this was the theatrical of a gang member walking up and killing of the two, you know, and this, again, was a theatrical. That image is now trending all over social media with fuck 12. What's that do? That's inspirational. That's radicalization. This is what we don't, and the social media companies do nothing about it, okay? Mm. And this is what I get at, okay? And that's why, you know, again, everybody knows it, that, you know, I am Sergeant Penny and myself, because we're on the same mission, is to, you know, basically create a safe environment. Because, you know, again, people could say, well, get off social media, don't use it. Great, I'll get off of it. But guess what? I'm not protected in the real world. Mm. You know about all the use of vehicles to kill people? It happened in London, happened in Ohio State, happened in Berlin. That was from ISIS magazine, Ramaya, number 4, released in November. We had it before anybody else did, and it was trending across Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube with the hashtag Ramaya4. And since then, we caught it first week of November. It was to inspire and recruit, especially around the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade vehicles. It's still being out there. So basically, since the release of that Ramaya magazine, you've had Ohio State, luckily, you know, Berlin, and now London. Look what happened. And that's, so you tell me that, okay, get on social media. I'm not protected in the real world.
Well, look, we're up to time. I think we've pretty much covered all of the important stuff, but I just want to end on a few key points here. So first of all, you said you've been, you know, not inundated, but you've received a number of threats aimed towards you and your family, and you believe that's predicated on this false belief that you had to do with the Wall Street Journal report.
Yeah, because the Wall Street Journal reporters are included in those death threats.
Mm. So, again, to be absolutely clear at the end of the broadcast, you had nothing to do with the Wall Street Journal story. You're actually sympathetic towards the YouTubers that have been caught up in this, and it certainly wasn't your intention for any of those people to get brought in to this particular matter. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. And the other...
That's why I'm doing this interview with you.
And the other kind of just final wrap-up point is, you know, what's the end goal? I mean, what if YouTube don't listen to you? What if you're dismissed as a crank? What if nothing fruitful comes out of it that you want, and instead all we get is advertisers walking away, you know, from the platform? How will you feel about kind of the work you've put in over these last you know, certainly 2 years, but actually if I look at your resume, beyond?
My thing is, and I don't think it will ever, my thing is the ads are the byproduct of finding the terrorist videos that appear on the platform. And again, shame on us. Every day this goes on, and who knows? Last year through Ramadan, we had Orlando, we had Turkish Airport, we had Bangladesh, we had Nice. I hope, and maybe, you know, we don't go through the same thing here, but everything I'm looking at, and, you know, how these things are trending and what people are talking about, we could have some very similar situations that every day that goes by, and look what happened in London a few weeks ago, that we don't have a terrorist attack somewhere. We had Russia the other day, St. Petersburg. We find scores and scores of Islamic, you know, extremist videos in Russian. Is shame on them, okay? That's the issue, is to get the, if you take or minimize or find a way to rid these terrorist videos off of YouTube, then advertisers will come back. I'll stop squawking. And if they can do it on their own, great.
So very last question. Obviously, I know you've you know, had discussions with the law firm I referenced earlier in regards to legal action being brought against some of these media companies, you know, like Facebook, like YouTube, etc., and Twitter. I want to ask you, and I know obviously you don't necessarily have the requisite legal expertise, but do you think that law firm, for example, might be interested in exploring a potential class action for the affected YouTubers? That, I guess,
yeah, maybe, maybe, because I think it's the same. I'm not a lawyer, and I gotta, you know, talk it. But I think it's again, because YouTube did not, again, go back to March of 2015, and again, it got a lot of attention in March and April of 2015. Google was well aware of this going back to March of 2015. Did nothing. Continued to let it happen. So basically, you know, and part of it is, why aren't they doing anything about it? Okay. You know, and so maybe, you know, the reason why these YouTubers, and again, I can't talk about it. I can't speak to the law firm. I'm not a lawyer, but maybe it's the same argument. Why isn't YouTube, not the ads? Why aren't they doing more to take down the terrorist videos, or finding ways? Again, I mentioned it before, Anwar al-Awlaki, right? What's so hard to build a filter into YouTube that blocks it? I told you about Kufa right there. I gave you two keywords we trend on. Anwar al-Awlaki and Kufa. Right there, that video should be quarantined for review. What's so hard? I just gave you the technique, part of it, right?
Yeah.
And it's up right now today. We're Kufas. You on it? You want to? How do you feel that every day somebody looks at it and you don't know who's being radicalized? Lone wolf. Omar Mateen, lone wolf.
So, Eric, as I said, it's been a super interesting conversation. I appreciate your candor. I don't know if this will kind of do any good. I kind of feel that your agenda and the agenda of, say, the Wall Street Journal are two very different things. And I think, you know, certainly in my experience, I see a lot of people who are terrified by things that they can't control. And certainly social media, you know, there's increasing amounts of censorship, not just in terms of what I agree fully with you about in terms of radicalization. In fact, quite the opposite. You know, Twitter's had a ISIS problem for many, many years that they've really struggled to address. Meanwhile, if you're a conservative who happens to say something that they don't like, you will be banned from the platform fairly quickly. And this is an observable phenomenon. So, you know, I don't know if there's any way back from this. I don't know if YouTube can kind of fix the problem for all the affected YouTubers. And certainly some people may apportion some blame to you, but I think, you know, just the knowledge that you didn't cooperate with the Wall Street Journal should certainly be enough to buy you a pass in the eyes of most of the affected YouTubers. And certainly
I hope so, because again, I'm forget what it is, I'm looking out for all of us. And again, forget the money, the resources. What good is this if any of us lose our lives as a result of terrorism? One life lost as a result of terrorism, and that this is going on, is one life too many. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. So as I said, thanks very much for your time, Eric. I'll just wrap up the show now. So there you have it. That was Eric Feinberg himself, a man talked about in the media, but who's never really kind of gone on record to the degree he has here. Again, the take-home points, if you've been paying attention, not anything to do with the Wall Street Journal reports. That's misinformation. The Wall Street Journal, for some reason, appear to have repurposed earlier stories that indeed were driven by Mr. Feinberg and his company, but kind of tailored them to their own interests. Now, we're going to be moving forward on this story. We're going to have more YouTubers, we think, lined up to kind of talk about this as we try and get out of what's being dubbed AdGate. But certainly from this show, we're going to end it here. So I've been Richard Lewis. Sam's been the producer. Eric Feinberg's been the guest. Thanks a lot for watching, and we'll catch you on the next episode.